Is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago,
a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Nancy's Pizza and the Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Don't want to jump the guy with the big deep voice, do you? Welcome into the second installment of the Hockey Show. We are presented by Four Winds Casino with Barstool Chief. I'm Pat Boyle on a dreary Wednesday night in Chicago. How you doing, Chief?
I'm doing well. We're getting the hockey weather almost.
It is. It's turning.
It is. Winter is coming.
It's turning. The team continues to be on the road. It's the most bizarre schedule in my 13, 14 years of covering this team. It's just been bizarre.
I feel like they've had three home games. Is that accurate?
They've had six.
Six. Okay, so halfway
six out
there.
Of 16.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to see all the games because they weren't all on TV. But I fixed that.
Oh, they're not? I haven't heard that.
No.
Really?
I did fix that problem, though, so I'll be watching you guys the next broadcast.
So, okay, we'll get into the TV situation because, I mean, we hear the apps coming out this week.
Good.
But I'm getting texts from guys like Carmen DeFalco. He's trying to watch the Bulls game tonight, and because of the weather, things aren't working so well.
I'm glad that you're the point of contact for some people.
I love it. Sure. I really, yep. if Xfinity wants to know whether or not this is ruffling the feathers of their customers, walk around in my shoes for a day.
Xfinity or somebody should be picking up your data. Okay, they should be paying your phone this week, all the texts you're getting.
Nonstop people coming up, and it's like, I don't blame them.
Credit to me, I have not really been one of them, just a few joking comments here and there.
No, yeah. You haven't.
Yeah.
You'll write a blog.
Eviscerating everyone. Yeah.
All right, so the Hawks are 6-9-1.
Mm-hmm.
What have we learned about this team through the first 16 contests, the first month plus of the year?
That they're not very good. That they're better than last year, but this is probably about what I would have expected, right? You're under 500, you're
in games.
Yeah, they're more competitive on a nightly basis.
The telling stat there is in 15 of the 16 games, they've had either the lead in the third period, been tied, or down one goal in the third period in 15 of 16. Again, that gets you nothing.
How many moral victories is that worth?
I don't know. In my world, maybe seven.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, so it's been tough. And, you know, they've tried, you know, I feel like they've pulled basically every lever that they can to get this thing going with different line combos. But it's just, if you look at it, there's just the puzzle pieces don't really fit together. So now the news today is that Bedard is being moved over to left wing. I welcome that idea and that move. I think it's good for him. I do think that'll be his position long term.
I'm feeling we're trending more in that direction long term, like a Kurashev type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
A Kucherov situation, Kurashev. But he's on a line with Kurashev, who's going to center that line, along with Teuvo Teravainen.
Yeah.
So in Seattle tomorrow night, we're going to see Bedard, Kurashev, Teravainen open up as the top line. And look, I mean, he's got 13 points in 16 games, but just the three goals. And you listen to Bedard earlier this week, and you can hear it's weighing on him. Here's Connor on the slump.
You can look everywhere, but like just you know, feeling like I'm having more of an impact on the game. Maybe like I felt like earlier in the year I was making a lot of plays, pretty dangerous out there. You know, lately been just less of an impact and not really making a difference. So hopefully can contribute more.
He had his best chemistry at the early part of the season with Teuvo.
Mm-hmm.
He had his best chemistry last year with Kurashev. When they were together, and they were together the most, second half of the season. So call it the chemistry line. That's Luke's hoping that chemistry that those three players have. My issue is, who's the puck retriever there?
they don't have a like a real forechecker on that on that line. So that's look, they don't have a guy who's going to win battles down low. They don't have a guy who's and I like Kurashev. I just don't think that he's really a natural center. Certainly not a top line center. I think the closest thing they have to that on the team is Dickinson. And I know they've got Dickinson in this third line role. He's your best center. So in my eyes, he should be playing your top line center minutes. And I would play him with Bedard. He will, if he, he's going to be, you know, he's probably always going to be F3 coming in on the forecheck. But once you have the zone play established, he will win pucks back. He is good defensively. I think he and Teravainen will create more turnovers so you can get a little bit more going in transition, hopefully. And then you can free up Bedard. To hopefully create in transition with some space too, as opposed to having him be down low and be in the F3. So that to me, I don't understand the Kurashev one, but it's just they don't have any centers.
Well, that's it. It's out of necessity. I mean, they don't have an answer as a number two center. You said Dickinson's their only true center. I don't argue with that.
Right.
Foligno probably is the next best option because he's the best at faceoffs currently on the team right now.
Yeah, but the foot speed and the creativity is just not. He's not a top six caliber center in the NHL. And there was a rumor, I think it was from Elliot Friedman a few weeks ago, that the Hawks were reportedly in the market for a second line center. So it took him about
That's like
six
the Bears.
Games
that's like the Bears being in the market for
a guard,
a left guard, and a right guard, a center. Yeah. You know, like. Everybody wants a second line center,
right. So,
and they want a top 2D. It's
and they just didn't adequately. You know, I like the business they did over the summer for the most part, but this is a glaring hole and a glaring weakness. So if you remove Bedard out of that spot, well, then now you're really at a dearth of centers. You just don't have any. So again, I would just put Dickinson up there, try to have one competent line,
but then that takes away the shutdown line, and if you want to stay in games and it doesn't go well for you, all of a sudden you're down 2-0.
Who cares? Who cares? Like, I don't care if they lose.
Clearly, the Hawks care because Kyle Davidson said it's time for us to change some things and to start moving up the standings. We're no longer going to be the bottom feeder. So, and there's...
But I think you have to look at the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
The roster construction, while you did add, you added some veterans, you added some guys who you hope are there, but with Bertuzzi and Teravainen that are there when you're good again, the roster construction is not good enough to take that step forward. Taking a step forward to me would be, all right, but Bedard is inching towards 100 points. And that's really what you want. Because right now, with him as a center, you have a below average defensive player, even though he has taken steps. I think he's been better defensively this year in his own zone than years prior or than last year, but he's about average or a little bit above average offensively. And you didn't draft him number one overall to be just below a point per game guy. So
not at all. 312-332-3776. That's the way you can get a hold of us. Tom in New Jersey, you're up first on the Hockey Show. How are you doing tonight, Tom?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I missed you guys. I'm glad you're back. I used to listen on Saturday afternoons.
Oh, welcome back. Thank you for listening.
I am a transplanted to Chicago. I grew up in Oak Park. I went to Fenwick. I love the Hawks. And my question tonight is kind of a philosophical one. The Hawks have obviously had a lot of great draft picks over the last few years. Why are these guys kind of languishing in the minors, and why play aging veterans who are not going to be there when it finally gets turned around? I mean, I'm talking about Taylor Hall, Donato, this guy Craig Smith. What happened to Korchinski? What happened to the defenseman they got last year as a second pick?
Levshinov. They're all in Rockford, Tom. They're developing there, and some of them are having a little bit of a roller coaster ride at the AHL level. Yeah. So,
did they make the wrong picks? I mean, when you draft a guy number two overall, shouldn't he be starting for your, for your NHL team rather than for Rockford?
Definitely not as a defenseman. It takes a long time for defensemen.
Tom, thanks for the call.
To break in and be an effective player. And you don't want to... Korchinski was only up last year because they had no place to put him. He wasn't eligible. He wasn't old enough to play for Rockford. He was probably too good for the WHL. So out of necessity.
So there would have been no development. Their team won the league in the WHL. He had been a star player. You would have stunted his growth keeping him there, doing bad habits, playing lesser opponents.
Correct.
He should have been able to be in the AHL. That's a whole other discussion for another day. Now they changed the rule this week that these guys that are playing in the CHL, OHL, WHL, they will be allowed to go to school in the States, which in a case like Korchinski, he could have been drafted when he was drafted, but he might decide to go play Wisconsin for a year or Michigan or wherever and, you know, get 40 games, better competition than at the WHL level, and then come to the AHL as a 20-year-old the following year.
I think this rule will certainly guarantee that it will be better competition in the future. Because I think you're going to see NIL money go to these Canadian kids that'll come over and have good college careers. But the college also allows you to spend more time in the weight room because you're only playing games on weekends. And then you're playing against oftentimes, while these guys might not ever make the NHL, you're playing against guys who are 22, 23, sometimes 24 years old. They have man bodies that you just, as opposed to playing in the CHL, we were playing guys as young as 16 and really nobody over 19. So you're going to be playing against, you know, closer to grown men. That I do think that would prepare you better for the NHL. And Levchinov will be up eventually. I think he'll get some games this year. I think Korchinski will get some games this year. I think Nazar will too. So, but there's no point to having, you don't want to have Nazar come up and just replace Lucas Reichel on the fourth line. You want him playing power play. You want him playing top minutes. And it's just,
I think what people, you know, depending on the level of fandom as far as your hockey knowledge, I think a lot of people look at like the NFL and say, look, you take somebody second overall, he should be starting. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, different story. Yeah. They're 22, 23,
exactly.
21 years of age at a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
College football is its own minor leagues.
Correct.
And so when you draft a 17 or 18-year-old, they aren't going to be. I mean, Bedard is the exception to the rule.
Correct, yeah.
And so you're not going to see. And you're going to see, like you said, defensemen develop, take longer.
Mm-hmm.
They take 4 to 5 years. Corey Crawford took 6 years a goalie. So, I mean, it
even a Cale Makar, I believe he did 2 full years at UMass. And then he came in for a playoff run at the end. Same thing with Charlie McAvoy.
They love what they did with Alex Vlasic. 2 years ago, played a full season in Rockford in every situation. That way, you get him power play minutes when he's never had power play minutes before. You get him on the PK. You get him on the power play. You get him top line minutes against the number one line of the opposition. And therefore, when he makes the jump to the NHL, he has had a wealth of experience that he wouldn't get if if Frank Nazar right now is on the Blackhawks. He's playing in a bottom six role, but he's a top six type
future
of player.
Yeah.
You know?
Eventually, though, I do think there is something to the point where it's like these guys who they have up are not NHL players either. You know, there's a lot of guys who it's like, and I like Craig Smith. I like some of these guys, but at some point, I do think this year, especially after the deadline. So if you want to see these prospects, I think you'll see them this season. They're going to have to move some guys out at the deadline, and then they're going to sign the college kids and they'll come in, burn out year off their entry level deal, but they're not ready. And you look at Connor Bedard, like you can make an argument that, you know, he probably could have used some seasoning. Like he's talented. He's ready. He's a superstar, but like he's had an adjustment period for sure.
What I get a lot of tweets directed my way where they say, why doesn't he go to the backhand? And I think you and I got into this. We were texting after last week's show. We went home and watched the rest of the Blackhawks game. And, you know, you develop some habits as a young player.
Yeah.
And you, at every level, you realize, okay, I can get away with this. I can do this. I can't do this.
Right.
He went from WHL right to the National Hockey League at warp speed. He spent much of last year finding out what passes he can no longer make.
Yeah.
What shots work here, what shots worked in the World Juniors but aren't going to work here.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still going through that vetting process.
Yeah.
So I think the backhand is a part of that. He has become so reliant on his biggest weapon, and it is his best weapon. It's world class. You've even seen other Hawks use it, you know, in their game. You know, just that curl drag a little bit, changing the angle, try to use the defender as a screen. I think he's been so reliant on it and had so much success with it. He hasn't been forced to try anything else. But now he's in a league where time and space is at the utmost importance. Mm-hmm. And it lacks, you don't have the time to always go to your forehand. And I think that is one area he's going to have to develop.
Yeah, and he's got to get inside a little bit more too.
Yeah,
and that's where those
even
backhand,
though he's not the biggest guy in the world.
Like if you look at Sidney Crosby and Patrick Kane, in my head, those are two of the best backhand shooters of all time. They don't take those from outside the dots; they take them from inside the dots. And it's backhands; it's you deke pass a guy, but it has to be a weapon in your locker, where they have to respect the fact that you'll go wide and beat him and be able to chip a backhand up, you know, underneath the bar. We haven't seen him do too much of that. Maybe now that he's on a wing, he might.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 312-332-3776. Let's go to Nathan in Schaumburg. How you doing tonight, Nathan?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Big fan.
Thanks.
Thanks, Nathan.
So I had a question, and it's a little further down the line, you know, if they really don't start getting this thing together. You know, I like Luke Richardson, but there's a lot of really good head coaches that are available right now. You know, Todd McClellan, Gerard Gallant, Jay Woodcroft. I mean, how much slack do you think that Richardson has just kind of in this situation going forward?
All right, thanks for the call, Nathan.
Well, he's right. There are some pretty big names out of work. Joel Quenneville out of work, who's now eligible too. I don't think any of those guys would be interested in this job. So if you're replacing Luke Richardson, you have to be pretty sure that you're upgrading. If I were one of those guys, I would not take this job. So there are still...
If you're Gerard Gallant and you don't have a job?
Yeah, but there's always turnover in the NHL. Somebody who's supposed to be in the playoffs, who's struggling around Thanksgiving, Christmas, will get fired, and Gerard Gallant will be the first call. So if it's... Should I take the Blackhawks job now, or should I wait another few months to see what becomes available? I think I'm waiting a few months.
Yeah. Now, look, this is year three for Luke, and it's the first real year that I think he's under the microscope.
I think so, too.
And as we just said, they have one legitimate center.
Exactly.
So, like, he's going to be judged on where they are in the standings, how the power play is, their goal differential at the end of the year, all the different metrics you might want to use. And at the end of the day, the roster's better than it was last year, but it's still not good enough to compete.
They are miles off of it. Like that.
That should be our next segment.
Okay.
Let's talk rebuild
and
timeline.
Great.
Where we're at right now, what is realistic? Because, you know, timelines can get blurred. And I think as we saw over the last month since the London game, the Bears timeline looks like it's going to have another reset.
It's been obliterated.
Yeah.
There is no timeline. Time is a flat circle.
And I also want to talk about how that team, the Chicago Bears, and what they're going through right now affects how you look at the current rebuild of the Blackhawks. Does it make you feel better? Does it make you feel worse? And the guy sitting to my right, who's got the well-coiffed hair, even though it's raining outside, it's made him feel worse.
Yeah.
So we'll dive into that. That's coming up next. It's The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM at 1000. On the FM at 100.3 HD2. On your phone through the ESPN Chicago app.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM.
At 1000.
On the FM.
At 100.3 HD2.
On your phone.
Through the ESPN Chicago app.
We're back on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're presented by Four Winds Casino with Ryan Brandel. I am Pat Boyle. What family member doesn't like that you're always referred to as Chief when you're...
I think my mom would probably be the one. Okay. Yeah, my mom would be the one.
Do you think she's listening?
I think that both my parents are in California right now, so I doubt it.
Okay.
So
they can watch on the...
Yeah,
on the Twitch or the app.
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit outside of their expertise.
Let's talk a little bit about the timeline for this Blackhawks rebuild. We talked a little bit last week about where it's at.
Yeah.
I feel like it's year 3.5, depending on... I looked at the trade deadline when they moved Hagel, and then that following year, that offseason where you moved Doc and you moved DeBrincat and you Strom said goodbye to him and all that. That's when it really got going.
So here's where I am having a slight... It's been an internal freak out for the most part, but this was supposed to be a step forward this year. They look like they're picking in the top 5 or 7, most likely. So then next year was supposed to be the year where you're fighting for a wild card, right? Is what the general consensus was.
Yeah.
Year 3 of Bedard, year 4 of Richardson or whatever, year 4 of Davidson. That seems impossible to me, because even if you're bringing up Nazar more, Lavshinov, Korchinski, they're all rookies.
Yeah.
So they're going to struggle. And while they have some promise and a lot of skill, they're not Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, like these guys who just step right in and are stars right away. So if they're not if they're more complementary pieces, where is the winning coming from? Because it doesn't. They're going to be locked in the same two goalies unless they make some kind of a big trade.
Well, they're going to. Unless Kemeso develops rapidly here, they've got one more year Mrazek.
Yeah, and Brossoit.
And Brossoit, he was on the ice today. He's not traveling. Didn't go with the team out west.
I do like him, but he's not your long term solution either. So it's my point with that was, unless they make some kind of wild trade, you're not going to have this influx of goalie wins for a young, struggling team. So you're going to have the same kind of replacement-level goalies. You're going to have a ton of rookies and these aging veterans who are still on the roster. So next year's team, again, barring some big move, is probably going to look a lot like this year's team in the record book.
Don't you look at goalies in the NHL like you look at closers in MLB?
It's become that.
Where there's two or three elite guys that you can count on year to year to year, and then the rest kind of fluctuate. Get on a heater, and he's a good closer for a year or two, and then the next year you're like, all right. I think you can always find that group of goalies that are out there. And really, in this league, you're looking for a 1A and a 1B, unless you have Shesterkin.
Yeah, right. Unless you have, there are guys like Igor, Samsonov. There are some really great
goals. Vasilevsky's getting long in the tooth, but
does feel like there's not as many great goalies as there was when I was a kid.
And I don't know if it's the schedule with more of the 3 and 4 nights or more back-to-backs or what it is, but it seems like most of the league relies on their second goalie to start 25 to 30 games.
Yeah, I think that might be part of it. I also just wonder if the goaltending has not caught up to the skill. So in the 90s, you would have guys, the 90s and 2000s, you seemed like you had a ton of we're running into Belfour, we're running into Waugh, we're running into Hasek, Brodeur, Mike Richter. There was just a ton of star power caliber goalies, where now it doesn't really feel... doesn't feel that way. It feels to me now, it's you mentioned Igor Vasilevsky. There are those guys. But you look at Colorado won the cup with a guy who's basically average. Vegas won the cup with their third or fourth goalie or whatever.
Sixth goalie.
Yeah, so there's just not...
Florida won it.
Yeah, Bob is...
Going back to Bob, but Bob had they had almost put him on the shelf and out to pasture.
Bob has always been a light switch guy.
But that's right. That goes back to my MLB closer.
Yeah.
The guy that you're like, this guy's locked down, lights out every single, and then all of a sudden next year you're like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah. Bob, he it cracks me up because he would win the Vezina for Columbus, and then the next year it'd be like, we got to get rid of this guy.
Right.
We can't believe we gave him this contract.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Florida, signs for $10 million. He's their third because they had Spencer Knight at the time. Like Spencer Knight had kind of unseated him. Then Bob comes back and he's like, oh, you need to win the Stanley Cup? I'm your guy. So he's a weird one. But I just feel like there's...
Don't you think a star besides Bedard is going to emerge from the draft picks they've already made and that are either in junior or in the AHL right now?
No.
I
think if Nazar or Moore was that type of a guy, like a star guy, he would be here already. Like he would have been too good for college hockey. He would have been a Hobey Baker type of guy. They're not. Okay. I think they're going to be
let's define star. I mean,
like Malkin, McKinnon, okay, Kucherov.
What about like Willie Nylander?
You think they've got a Willie Nylander?
I'm talking like not the elite star. I'm talking the next level.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. I think they have.
Do you think Levshinov has a chance?
Oh, on defense, I feel better about their defensemen than I do about the forwards. So I really like Levshinov. I really like Sam Rinzel up at Minnesota. I think he'll be a definite top four. So then you got three guys right there, and if Korchinski is a top four, then you got your top four. You got Vlasic, Korchinski, Rinzel, and Levshinov. That's your top four. That's awesome. That's great. You got to score goals.
Right.
And
who's going to be their Hossa, right? They, at some point, and right now they're set up pretty nicely as far as the cap.
Yeah.
Going further. Who is going to be their, you know, they don't need to go get Brian Campbell because they've got the I think solidified. I mean,
Seth Jones is still here too. So,
Yeah.
So he's a factor there.
Yeah. And so I'm with you. Elite scoring, center, big centerman. I mean, they're not an extremely big franchise when you look at the depth chart elsewhere.
Really almost have none. It's almost not. I mean, it's Doc is a prospect who's got some size. The two kids they drafted this year have Vaneker. They got some guys like, but they're not projected to be necessarily like slam dunk top six guys either. So if you say like who's your Willie Nylander? Willie Nylander's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I think he's fantastic.
Right. So I don't think they have a guy like that. I think could one of them be like a Matthew Boldy, who I really love up in Minnesota. We just saw him the other
night. Get the equalizer the other night against the
Hawks.
Could
they have a guy like that? Maybe. But like he's a pretty big boy too with a lot of speed and a lot of skill. So I don't know. That's where it's like I get into this. I go to these dark places with this rebuild because it's like they got to – I'm starting to lean towards they have all these assets and they have all these young players. I almost want to find a disgruntled star somewhere else and make a big splashy trade.
Like I don't want that star now. I want that star earliest next season, but maybe.
I agreed.
You know, and I don't want to start the clock.
But it's one of those things you never know when they're going to become available. So let's say Brady Tkachuk is he's like, I can't do this Ottawa thing anymore, and he's available now.
I would walk to Ottawa and have him jump on my back and bring him here.
Exactly. So
he's got one more. Like, doesn't he have?
I think he's got three more years on a contract. But it could be like a Jack Eichel thing.
Right.
Where Eichel, I mean, obviously that was an extreme circumstance, but he became available. Somehow Vegas always has money and assets to pull off these trades. I don't understand. It's like they're cheating somehow. Vegas is cheating.
Well,
but they have to.
Most people in the NHL feel they've manipulated the rules to the fullest extent.
They pulled the Patrick Kane.
So much so that this past week they talked again about LTIR and why magically the salary cap goes away in the playoffs. I don't know how that ever became a thing.
It became a thing in was it 15 when
Well, we used it in 15.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Hawks, like, invented
Antoine
it.
Vermette.
Yeah, Vermette.
Thank you for coming on.
Who else
on
did
down.
They get that year, too? Desjardins, they did the deadline for him, and I feel like they got one other. Oh, Kimmo Timonen. Which those guys didn't help that much. They played with basically 4D that whole playoff.
I should have got a ring along with Kimmo as much as he played Kimmo.
They gotta find the game is still the game, as Ryan Whitney always says. Like, what wins in the playoffs is big guys winning down low, and you could have all the speed in the world, and even a team like Edmonton, who's got McDavid and Hyman and these guys who can fly. They got to the Stanley Cup final once. So you have to be able to win in more than one way, and you have to have some big boys who will bang bodies.
So how has the Bears situation affected your outlook on the Blackhawks rebuild?
This is like when I wake up at 3 in the morning staring at the ceiling, being like, oh, my God, is the Hawks going to be just as bad as the Bears situation? And it's like you find out how, like, the sausage is made behind the scenes a little bit, and you're like, oh, my goodness, like, this is – like, I'm waiting. This one, like, the with Williams and the Bears, it was like, all right, we're ready to go now. And
right.
Clearly not. But I feel like I'm waiting. And I'm just going to suffer all this losing to then pop up and be disappointed in 3 years or 5 years or whatever. You know, like, the way that the prospect pool is shaping up now, they have a long way to go before they're ready to win a cup. And I don't know where the help is coming from.
Well, they can go out there and get a Tkachuk.
We'll see.
Type of player.
Yeah, if they become available. But they have to be available.
Well, look, and that's where I think, you know, being able to play with a Bedard is an attractive thing. I'm
if he starts lighting it up. Because when they got
Hossa, he's still a point per game guy almost on a team that has zero offense.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're moving him to wing. Here's Nick Foligno on the slump that Connor Bedard is in and how young players tend to go through things like this.
I think that's part of being a young player. And, I mean, we all go through it, whether you're young or old. But I think it's just understanding that it's a hard league, too, right? It's what are you doing for the team if you are tight-checked? He's a guy that's used to producing, and I get it, and we need him to, right? Like, that's the role that he's in, and there's a lot of guys in that role in our team that have to find a way to produce if we're going to have success. And so he's finding his way through that, and I think the biggest thing is the rest of your game has to be where it can't hurt the team either, right? And that's where I think we talked about it as a group for a lot of guys is, you know, if you aren't scoring, what are you doing to help the team in other aspects? And that's winning hockey, and that's, you know, where you grow as a player and a young player. And I think Connor's learning that right now. He's gonna find his way on the score sheet. It's a matter of time. The more you force it, the worse it gets sometimes. But he's a guy that, you know, he has enough ability and understanding and smart enough player to know he's going to put himself in good positions to get goals and points for our team. But, you know, make sure the other side of your game when it isn't there is really strong. And, you know, that's where we need to grow as a group so we can get on this little winning streak that we need to get on.
And it's been better. Yep. He's a -5. Last year he was, you know, for the season, -50. It was, you know, pretty much everybody on that team was other than Alex Vlasic.
Correct.
So I think he's been made improvements away from the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Still struggles mightily at the faceoff circle. Maybe him moving him to wing will help rectify that and take that load off his plate.
I really think, first of all, his shooting percentage is way down. And I think part of it is he's not getting to the same areas because there might be a little bit of a playbook out there on him. And some of it is, like, how many transition chances does he have? He needs – that's why I'm so in favor. I love Nick Foligno, and he's absolutely right with that quote. I don't hate the idea of Connor Bedard cheating a little bit if he has two responsible linemates to get himself out of the zone, get in transition, create plays in space, and just he has to see some go in. Like, that shooting percentage is, I think, is at 5%, 5.4% or something like that. Austin Matthews is shooting at like 24. Okay, so
did you notice on the Boldy equalizer that he did try to cheat a little bit on that play, and that may have led to the numbers that Minnesota had below the dot?
Yep.
So I mean, again, you are what you are. We're watching 88 in Detroit. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame, and he's going to have a statue outside the United Center someday, and he's made a career out of not playing a lot of defense.
I don't think he ever got a Selke vote. Okay.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
It has not happened. Yeah.
Now, I will say he did. I think he got a little too much heat from like 15 until he was hurt at the end for being like a nothing defense player. He got better. He got better at everything as his career went along.
Yeah.
And Connor Bedard has too. But I do think there is an element of he does need to see some go in. And it's just been a hard year and you start squeezing stick. And I think it'll come. So I'm not worried about him, but I do think he's a wing. And I think that's his best position, so they should just put him there.
All right, so coming up, we're going to have the Chief Worry Meter, okay? We had two number one overall picks taken in this town. Deemed generational talents. Connor Bedard, Caleb Williams. I want to find out from Chief where he's at. Where's the worry meter? Where does he feel Bedard is trending? And where does he think Caleb is trending? And, you know, where are his thoughts on that? And
another sleepless night for me.
White Sox Dave doesn't go through things like this, right?
No, no.
Only you.
Only me.
In your twisted world.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Roenick was enshrined on Monday in Toronto at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Had an epic speech, including a great Mike Keenan story. We have that for you next. It's The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
The Hockey Show
with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
Call us or tweet your comments to at ESPN 1000. The Hockey Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Wings Casino. Show's also sponsored by Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. Shout out to your parents who are listening on the...
Out in California, got the text. They are listening. So, Bill and Marianne, we got two listeners at least.
Bill's been through some stuff. God bless.
He's been through it.
Yeah, wow. So I want to ask you, I mentioned it before the break, and I want to know where your confidence is at. We had these two generational players taken in consecutive years, Bedard, Caleb Williams, and Connor gets injured last year. Tough, you know, as Wayne Gretzky said last week, you know, it's set up for... The worst, you know, one of the worst teams in the league gets the number one player. I mean, that's how it goes. The Bears, because of the fortunate trade they made with Carolina, we didn't think they were the worst team in the league.
Right.
And they aren't technically, but they're trending.
They will be at this rate.
Right now, I mean, what, they're probably 7th, 8th worst in the league.
Who would they be favored against in the if they played anybody in the league on Sunday?
After what they did against New England, look, I don't want to think that Caleb is broken and I'm not ready to have all that scar tissue that I have over the last 20 plus years of failed quarterbacks. I'm not putting that on this kid.
Right.
I'm not.
No.
But I you know, the holding on to the ball, like I'm like, oh my God. And then when you look at how they're going to get their way out of this, my level of confidence is not high. So I would say, from my vantage point, I have more confidence that Bedard is going to end up being that elite generational player right now than I do Caleb. What do you think?
I think I would still lean Caleb, but I think the Bears just seem like they have so much organizational rot that it... I thought this Bears team would be very similar to when Taves and Kane came into the Blackhawks. That team, they had everything kind of around them. Seabrook, Keith, Bolin, Bufflin, all those, Versteeg, Sharp, all those guys were already there. And then Taves and Kane were kind of like the last piece. And they had the first rookie year, they were solid team, fun to watch. The next year, they went to the Western Conference Finals.
Right.
Year after that, win Stanley Cup. I thought that's what this, the Bears.
Even with that offensive line.
The offensive line's worse than I thought. It's worse than I
thought. I don't know how anybody could have had a. PFF had them ranked high, middle of the pack coming in. I was like, where are they getting this data that this group is going to be middle of the pack?
I thought the tackles were at least average, and I thought they, Tevin Jenkins is good when healthy.
What's your biggest hang up on Bedard? Is it size? Is it what is he projecting to you so far that has you like, I don't know if I'm putting my cash into that?
I think it's somewhat size, but he is a perimeter player. Yeah. And we kind of played this experiment out with Patrick Kane, where it's like, if your best guy is just kind of on a perimeter guy these last several years where the Hawks are bad, like you cannot win that way. And so
Caulfield is great in the regular season. You got to see what he does in the postseason.
Yeah, and then the thing with Bedard is, while I love his edge work, he's a very good skater. He does not have the blow-by-you speed of a McKinnon or a McDavid where he just put his shoulder down and get around you. That's not really his game. So he's got to find other ways to create space. And I think he's finding out that it's very difficult to do in this league. All the defensemen now can skate. They're all big. The teams are very well structured. They're all well coached. Like he's up and he doesn't have a lot of support. So I think he is kind of up against it. And that's where it's like, is he a McDavid? I don't think he is. I don't think anybody thought anyone was McDavid coming out of the draft, but I think people were thinking that he would be, a top five player in the league, top 10 player in the league. You have to get 100 points to be in the top.
I got to come give you a hug because I think the Bears have broken you a little bit.
It's entirely possible. It is entirely possible.
You're not the chief eye. You tend to move towards the glasses half full approach usually, when it comes to sports.
Yep.
You're not that guy right now. And I think I can't blame you.
Yeah.
I can't for what you do on a daily basis.
It's a grind.
It is a grind.
These teams are killing me.
But namely the one at Hallis Hall. Hey, we got to touch on JR, okay?
Okay, let's do JR.
He covered a lot of real estate in that speech. Plenty of laughs, some tears, as you would expect from JR. Great stories, apologies to former teammates and to the Wirtz family. He also had a great story about draft night with one Mike Keenan.
In 1988, the Blackhawks drafted me 8th overall in the first round. And surprising, seeing I was only 5'10 and 150 pounds. I'm convinced the deciding factor of their pick came the night before the draft in a restaurant bathroom. Standing next to Mike Keenan at a urinal, he oddly asked me, "You have any balls, kid?" Feeling a bit uncomfortable because of the current situation, I said, "Enough to play for you." Thank goodness he didn't look over the divider. I might not have been their first pick that year.
Great story from JR. Emotional. Good thing they ended with him because no one would have been able to follow that. As far as the apologies that he made one directed towards the Wirtz family. "I let my ego get in the way of my contract talks. And to Bill Wirtz's successors," meaning Danny Wirtz, "thank you for building a dynasty in the last decade." So
yep.
I don't know if that hatchet has been buried yet, but he tried, I think.
I think it is. I think he'll have 27 up in the rafters. Not this year, but maybe next year. That's my prediction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next Blackhawk to go into the Hall of Fame, Duncan Keith next year, first ballot.
If he's not first ballot, then they have to get rid of that distinction. To me, he was the best defenseman of his generation.
There is a group. So Joe Thornton, Carey Price, Duncan Keith lead the list. Zdeno Chara, Ryan Getzlaff, and Tuukka Rask.
That's a good list. That is a good list.
I know, and that's my, no way would you ever say Zdeno Chara should go in before Duncan Keith. But from a cachet standpoint, because he played on the East Coast,
you know, like, I don't know how, I don't know. But here's the thing. Good thing Edzo's part of the selection committee, because that may help things out.
Because Jumbo's got to go.
Yeah, for sure.
I would probably, of that list you just gave, I would say those three. Keith, Chara, Thornton.
All right. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're presented by Four Winds Casino. We will be back to wrap things up after this.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Nancy's Pizza and the Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Final moments of the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino. Our thanks to sponsors Chevy Drive Chicago and Nancy's Pizza. And thanks to our producers, Kevin Zipak and Matt McMaster. Parting shots time. What do you have for us?
Yeah, I was so thrilled to see Roenick get recognized. He deserves it, 500 goals. And if you're my age, you were raised on Jeremy Roenick and Chris Chelios. They played fearless, but they also made it look fun. They were great players to watch. Pull up his YouTube highlights. Fight Bob Probert. Scores 50 goals. The last guy in Chicago to score 50 goals, Jeremy Roenick.
I will never forget him doing an interview with his mouth wired shut. Who else would do that?
Only JR.
Did you go with the frosted tips? You're a big hair guy.
We did it. My whole team did it when I was in prep school. The entire team went blonde. So we did bleached hair.
All right. So maybe that's that'll be a wager down the road.
I never made that connection, but that's probably because everyone loved JR.
All right. I'm interested in seeing how Bedard does at wing tomorrow night with Kurashev and Tavo in Seattle.
He's got a dub.
And then on Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, you can see it on CHSN.
Yes, maybe. I can.
And Saturday TV. is Connor Bedard returns to his hometown. I think he's going to have 3 points in British Columbia on Saturday night.
That would get me mentally prepared for the Bears on Sunday.
All right, let's go. Let's get it done. That is going to do it for the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Four Winds Casino. For Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.